Yeah, and we will be taking your phone calls. Go ahead and give us a call. Talk to Ron Moorhead. Ask him about the Sierra Sounds or anything else you'd like to discuss with him, because he is full of information. He has been all around the world, and he has been trying to connect the dots for the past 40 years. He is, I like to call him, a cowboy city boy mixed into one. A lot of fun to talk to, great sense of humor, a lot of information. If he doesn't have the answer, he'll give you something to at least go to. So I've got something for you to go to as well, coasttocoastam.com. There's a lot of information there with all sorts of, all the different genres that we talk about here on Coast to Coast AM. But also, you can learn a lot more about Ron as well. You can hear some of the sounds that we've been playing from the Sierra Sounds, because we've got about 8 or 9 of them listed up there for you to listen to too. More to come. Your questions next on Coast to Coast AM with Ron Moorhead. We are back here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm Connie Willis, and we are taking your questions with Ron Moorhead and talking about the Sierra Sounds. Ron, there's one other sound that we didn't play, so I want to hear that one real quick, if you can listen in with us. Or did we hear that one? Maybe we did hear that one. I think we did. That's the one, like the... It's like, there's so much thought and emotion coming out of these sounds. It's amazing. These creatures. Well, are you ready to take some phone calls?
I'm ready.
Okay. There's one thing that we never touched on, which I can't believe, but I'm sure we'll get a call on them, is, you have all these recordings of all this talk, and we didn't talk about mind speak. What do you think of that?
Well, in quantum physics, if we got into the pineal gland, which that's how you mind speak. That's the key to it all.
True.
And I think if they can entangle you, and I think they do, they can mind speak to you. And, there's a lot of people that's just in the ape camp. They think there's still just some dumb ape running around out in the woods that haven't been found yet. And a lot of those people are my friends. I know them. But more and more people are leaning over towards what we've been talking about tonight. There's more going on with them, and there's a spiritual reason for it all. One of the things they can do, I believe, is entangle you mentally with mind speak, and they do that through the pineal gland.
Well, have you ever heard them mind speak to you? Did they mind speak to you?
No. My problem is I'm too analytical. And I've got to learn not to be so that way. I think that's caused me to not hear things that other people sometimes do hear. I'm going to get better at that, because I think we all got to learn how to reconnect with what's inside of us. And that's what I'm working on doing. Just like I've been using fluoride toothpaste for years all my life. And here I am trying to decalcify my pineal gland.
Right.
And, it's not easy once you... got a core around it that keeps things from penetrating.
Well, I don't I hear what you're saying. Who am I? But I think if they want to talk to you, you're going to hear it.
Audible, if they talk audible. If they
no, I think if they might speak, I think you're going to hear it, whether you're, screwed up or not. No, not that you're screwed up. I'm sorry.
Well, you're either going to hear it with your ears or you're going to hear it with your mind.
Yeah, but...
with your ears, that means audible and anybody can hear it. If you're trying to hear it with your mind, I think it's got to come through the pineal gland like everything else does. That's your third eye. I get you.
But I think...
you got a different one, but that's okay.
Yeah, I just think maybe they haven't tried to talk to you that way yet.
Maybe that's not who you are. Maybe I got a good pioneer glass.
Yes, you do. You're just the audio guy, okay? You're just the audio guy.
That's coming up for you.
All right, let's hit the phone calls. See, I told you I had a great personality, right? Let's go to the phone calls. We have many of them. Let's see if we can't catch them here. We have wild card line number 2, Nancy in New Holland, Pennsylvania. Nancy, how are you tonight?
I'm great. You guys are just so much fun to listen to.
Do you have a question for Ron?
Yes, I have 2 questions. Does he know, has he seen, or would he know if they have children, if they have if they breed and make children? And then my second question is, do they grow old, and have anyone ever found any, you know, ones that have passed away and maybe their remains or are in the woods or something?
Good questions. They do have children, at least the ones we dealt with had children. We found a little 9-inch track next to an 18-inch track in the snow up there one time. And we've heard, I've got a little voice recorded up there, which I should have sent you, Connie, but I just didn't know which ones. Anyway, I didn't. and it's there was a little one, and definitely. And they do have a lot of reports where they saw small ones. And they do breed, but again, there's different kinds of these things, so I'm not sure all of them are meant to breed. But the natives go back a long way in talking about how they've taken their women and supposedly inbred them, but then solution to pollution is dilution. It's like that one.
Yes.
So the more they interbreed with, if the chromosomes allow it, which they'd have to be genetically really close to us to breed like that. But maybe they are. Mitochondrial DNA, which is carried through the mother's side, would be human. And that makes them more human. So a question I have for myself and for how human do they need to be to receive the benefits that 100% humans like us receive? And I say that spiritually. As far as them getting old, my daughter's seen one. She's seen them three times. One of them she's seen looked very old. It was real scrubby looking and kind of lanky. Wasn't buffed out like the younger ones are. So I do think that, but they take care of their own. And that's according to Native American lore. And I've had people report to me that they actually saw them turning boulders over. And they take care of their own. They bury them. Or some of them may just interdimensionally get out of here, and then you've got the time element, because in other dimensions time doesn't exist like it does in our three-dimensional world here. So I say that because up in the Sierras, when I encountered them in the 70s, I believe the same family group or maybe the same ones are still there today. That's a long time ago. So how old they get, we don't know. There's never been a body found, and that's why you don't have DNA out of them so much. But what DNA has been, there has been some DNA extracted, supposedly. We'll find out more about that in a month or two, if it's going to come out. And as we'll show, the mitochondrial, I'm sure, as being human, the nuclear DNA, which is the male counterpart, may not be. And that would show, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that there's probably some alien involvement in manipulation of the DNA.
Great information. Great questions, Nancy. Are you a Bigfoot, or do you go out and look yourself?
No, not yet.
No, not yet. We got to get you out there. You're in Pennsylvania. There's nothing but Bigfoot and UFOs there. Come on.
Okay. I'll give it a try. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Pennsylvania is known for so, you know, I think there's more UFO and Bigfoot sightings there than any state. I think Stan Gordon would stand behind that. I mean, that's a lot going on in that state. Well, let's head out to west of the Rockies, Denise from Canyon City, Colorado. Denise, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, hi, Connie. I'm doing fine. Thank you. And good evening, Mr. Moorhead. And thank you both for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, I must say I'm a retired fellow broadcaster in Eastern Red Coast back in the day, back in 85 when Art Bell was on.
All right.
So, I've been a long-time listener and a long-time Coast supporter. But I'll try to make this quick and brief. As George says, nothing happens by coincidence. I just wanted to call and share a little story with you guys real quick. I used to live over in Durango, Colorado. It's southwest Colorado. I lived about 10 miles out, basically in the thick forest. My parents had property there, and they had 65 acres, just beautiful, lush, thick forest. I had a mobile home on one side of the property. My daughter, one on the other. My parents had a house up on top of the hill. So back in 2003, it was so pretty out there and everything, we used to go hiking around. And being a baby boomer like I am, I'm very familiar with the Patterson-Gimlin film and saw that in the theaters with my parents when I was a kid. So, but I wasn't looking for Bigfoot when I moved onto this property that my parents had. We were just there living, you know, as people live. And anyway, so my daughter and I were out hiking, started out, And on the way back from our hike one day, I saw these huge footprints. Well, I tried to bring it up to her, and then I saw more. And, of course, you know, as people will, they, you know, like anything else, they don't want to believe you at first. So, anyway, my brother basically, to coin a phrase, was living next door, and he was the Grizzly Adams type. Taught me to track when I was 12. So being a native Coloradan, I knew what bear tracks were, mountain lions, mountain goats, you name it, whatever. So anyway, as another year or so went on, and I got my grandson to raise. So it was just me living out there by myself and with my grandson, and I was on the other side, like I said, of the property. There was a big pond where I lived in front of me, but it was dried up. Well, one evening in the middle of summer, we had a bunch of friends over in the driveway. All of a sudden, up on the mountain, we heard a Bigfoot scream. I mean, and they were all freaked out. I knew what it was because I was always kind of into stuff. And, you know, even before I started being a DJ and running coast and all these things, I was always into stuff. So I knew what it was. And they were like, yeah, right, whatever, Denise. And so, but as time went on, we started seeing Bigfoot activity. And long and short of the story is I started leaving food for them over the years. They would reject certain ones and take certain ones. They would knock to me. They would watch my house. They would come and stand and like look in my windows of my mobile home. But I knew that these weren't particularly like aggressive Bigfoot. And I used to go out, not on their account, just because I'm also a musician. And I would go out in the woods and just play my flute. Well, I think they really liked the music. But they used to do really weird things, like there was a field across the street full of these big white tumbleweeds. I'd go to bed one night, and there'd be nothing in my yard. The next day, my yard would be full of tumbleweeds. Ooh. They left handprints. They left face prints up on my parents' window. My whole family ended up seeing them. And then about 8 years ago, I spoke with George Norrie and Dr. Jeff Meldrum on the air right when he was about to write a book. And my brother had known Dr. Meldrum, but he didn't know that I was his sister. And he wanted to come out, and they wanted to come out and put cameras out and do all this stuff. He was writing a book, and I had photos and all these things. But something just told me not to disturb their habitat. So I didn't. But we did see some. We saw a big granddaddy one. He would come out. He was probably about almost 12 feet tall, really long hair, about two inches, silvery gray hair. And then there was a juvenile that had a deformed foot. There was a female, and there was another one. And all in all, when I left in 2013, there was about probably five of them, and they would, you know, they would seemed like they were around. It seemed like they didn't always leave in the winter. But anyway, so I left, and the last couple of days I left, I saw the really big old one, and he was just kind of ducked behind a tree and went up on top of the hill, and some friends were out there, and they didn't like to stay at my house because they'd seen things, too, after they'd teased me. So, but anyway, long and short of the story is all the people that go out in the woods with the cameras and they're trying to call for them and all this stuff, I didn't do any of that. And I find it's the people that are just out in nature and just mellow and whatever. And I do believe in the mind speak because when I first saw the footprints, I was like, Bigfoot.
And then did they talk back to you?
Well, not verbally, no, but like
so
I said, like they would leave things in the yard. And after I started feeding them various different things and at different spots on the property, they decided to make a little sleeping spot, like literally about, I'd say about 10 feet behind my mobile home, which I got pictures of the grass where they'd go sleep. And there was like perfect body imprints and always footprints. And like one time I left my handprint in the snow and took a little stick and drew a picture of my dog. I had this Dalmatian dog. And at first they used to throw rocks at my dog, or this one did. And then my dogs just kind of backed off. But the next couple of days I went out there and, or the next morning actually, and I always had a camera on hand. And this, one of the Bigfoot, I guess the one that had like the 18-inch footprint, I guess the younger daddy of the group, he left a handprint and he tried to copy my picture. And he had left the stick that he used there. And they would leave like weird piles of sticks in the pond and things that just weren't there the day before. And just all kinds, too much evidence over a period of 10 years to even recount here. But yeah, that's what happened with my personal Bigfoot encounter.
Great. Thank you for that story. Yeah, that's wonderful.
You are so welcome. And I know that's a long story, but thank you for listening.
No, that's great. We appreciate that. Thank you so much. And she had a great voice talking about the story as well. She told it. You know, Ron, that's what you hear a lot, is exactly what Denise was talking about. You have this relationship, and they have these little, you know, where they communicate back and forth, whether it's with MindSpeak or not, you know, neat little things like with twigs and with pictures and hands and, you know, just different things like that. I just, it still amazes me, and it's very consistent with people. And it is more, I do believe you do get more interaction with them when you just hang out and let them come to you.
Absolutely. I totally agree. If you're out there trying to get the money shot with a camera and trying to trick them or trying to shoot them or something like that, you're probably not going to have much, you're not going to have any results. Now, Patterson got lucky, basically, and Bob will even admit that, you know, they were just lucky when they snuck up on that one. But that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, she was talking about the older one, which reminded me, didn't you have, like, the old man around you?
Yeah, we think that's the one that maybe has that big track that we found up there.
Yeah, the old man. That's funny. Everybody names them, too. There's always a name for their little...
The old man.
The old man. I love that. You say, we thought it was the old man.
We didn't hear his voice after 72. We're not sure what happened. Something happened during the year of 73. We're not sure what, but Al Berry went up there with his brother and... tried to stay there most of the summer. Bill and I packed supplies into him with horses and mules, but he didn't have much go on. He had one walk-through camp one time with a 14-inch track, a small one, and that's all that happened all summer. But he was up there basically trying to get more stuff, more evidence, and I think we were very fortunate to get what we got. And I think I don't even, people say, well, what are you doing now? Did you cast these tracks? I don't cast tracks anymore. Why? Why?
Yeah.
People do that a lot. I know Jeff pretty well. I've traveled in Moscow and Siberia with Jeff Meldelman and a few people like that. But Jeff is not in the quantum aspects of Bigfoot at all. But he's a decent gentleman, a really nice guy, and he's got a lot of information, but it's all classical science. And, you know, he's got the tracks, he's got the evidence that he supports, he totally believes in these creatures in a personal way, but his scientific side tells him he's got to have more evidence. And that's hard because it's hard to get evidence, hard evidence on these creatures. And like the lady says, just go in there simple and stay simple and be neutral, be vanilla. That's the way I say it.
Yeah,
you'll have more happen.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And with Jeff, I don't know him or anything. He seems like a great guy. But the moment he hears MindSpeak himself, it'll all change, and then we'll hear different stories from him, because it hopefully will happen one day, because it does happen. So we've got more to come here with Ron Moorhead talking about the Sierra Sounds and all the different experiences he's had as well. We're taking your questions, too. This is the last segment coming up, so try to call in and get in. Good luck. There's a lot of phone calls here. Thanks for listening. It's Coast to Coast AM. Connie Willis, it's the most listened to overnight radio program in North America. It is Coast to Coast AM. We've been talking with Ron Moorhead, and we've got more to talk about with him. We're taking your phone calls. Coast to Coast AM, myself, Connie Willis, and Ron Moorhead of the Sierra Sounds, and then some, because that was back in the 70s that he did all that. Ron, when is the next time that you're going to go out there to the big hotspot area of yours?
Well, the Sierra Camp is in the Sierra Nevada Mountains of California. I've moved up to Washington. I live on the Olympic Peninsula now, and a lot of Bigfoot stuff goes on up here. I mean,
yeah, so you don't need to go back to the other to have some action, huh?
I don't need to, no. I got reports every day almost coming to me, and I got two or three. I guess got to get out in the field. I got the Creature Weekend coming up in about 2 weeks in Ohio, and I need to give a shout-out to that. But I got to give a shout-out to two people, if you don't mind.
Oh, sure, okay.
Well, one of them is Paul Graves. He lives in eastern Washington. He's a neat guy. He's a researcher.
Hey,
and the other one is, what's his name?
Oh, no.
They're from Denmark. Anyway, something like that.
Okay. Hey, from Denmark. What about
Daniel
going back?
From Denmark,
Daniel
from Dublin. Hey, Daniel. There, excuse me.
Dublin.
Got him.
Golly, get it straight, man. What's going on over there? what about going back to your spot, you know, the old hot spot there, only because, you know, the relationship you had with him, you don't have that desire?
Yeah, I want to do that this July. I'm going to California in July.
So
I hope to make a trip in there. One thing about it now, though, when you go in, you almost have to go in by horseback and pack mule because you can't carry enough in there to stay 2 or 3 days on just your back because the camp has been tore apart now. We did that this last summer. I wasn't part of that, but a couple of members of the other group was. It took 9 mule loads to get everything out of there, but the Forestry Service found out about it, and it's been there since the 50s, but it had to be dismantled, or they was going to penalize the group.
Wow.
He didn't associate Bigfoot with it, didn't associate me with it, so that's all good.
Okay, yeah, that is good. Until now, they heard it on coast.
Yeah, right.
Now you're in trouble.
I don't think that was the only camp that got dismantled. I think there's a lot of them going on that, you know, people are having to take apart. You pack that stuff in because you don't want to have to pack in all the time.
And
you don't want to have to carry your sleeping bag, your tent, all that stuff in. So you put it there and leave it there and try to secure it.
Sure. Well, I think your family there, the clan, I wonder how they felt about that. That, you know, if they're watching that being taken away, that had to be sad to them.
I found out, excuse me, I step on you too much, but
no, that's okay.
These guys who went up there to do that, it was two of the group and their kids, which are in their 40s now. They heard rock clapping in the middle of the night, and that is a definite sign these things are around. So that was just this last July, 2015.
Okay, well, I'll be interested in hearing what happens when you go back because I just think that seems like a long-term study now with you going back and having that same relationship with that same group. So you kind of got to, you know, it's like relatives.
I think we're probably going to have it. Yeah, that's the plan. Anyway, just got to find some animals down there. I'm not going to take my horses all the way back to California just to do that. So I'll have to acquire some somewhere.
Okay. Or, you know, helicopter now, or we can drone you in and drop you off. Do something like that.
Yeah.
Let's go east of the Rockies, Greg in Jacksonville. Hey there, Greg. Are you still hanging on there with us?
Good morning, folks. Two quick questions.
Sure.
What time of year was you up there when you heard all this stuff going on? And the second one, when the creatures would approach, did they approach upwind, downwind, and could you smell them and stuff like that? And I'll take my answers off the air. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
Good questions. Well, we went up there all the way from when the snow would let us, which would be by March sometime, I mean May or June, and stay all the way into as long as October, November sometimes, so the snow wouldn't let us anymore. So that could happen anytime. It didn't happen every time, but most of the time during the 70s, early 70s, they would come in. And that's the time, so it wasn't one specific time, it was several times. And as far as the, what was the second part of that question?
Oh, no, I was hoping you were remembering it. I was listening to you.
Yeah, well, I was writing it down. Didn't write the second one.
No, he asked about the smells, upwind, downwind.
Oh, the smell, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, we did not have a bad smell. They did not have a bad smell, and it was very close to them. And that's the common thing that you hear, is that they have a bad smell. But not all of them are the same. I got to keep saying that.
Right, but was the creature upwind or downwind from you when it
got closer? Well, we sometimes didn't even have wind, so it was never something we tried to... No, we didn't have wind in our camp. It was kind of like down in a little gully. So it was rarely was it windy when these things would come around. Hard to say if it was upwind or downwind. They were all around us sometimes, so I don't think that mattered. Never thought of it, really. We didn't smell them when they were close.
They smelled you guys.
Well, probably, you know, they have an olfactory sense. It's probably, they're primates, so it wouldn't be like a dog or a bear, but they would have an olfactory sense, which is probably untainted by our environment like we taint ours. It's probably more keen and more sensitive than ours.
Okay, well, let's head out to west of the Rockies, Howard in Vancouver.
Hello,
Washington.
Connie.
Hey there, Howard. Are you in Vancouver or Washington or where?
Yeah, Vancouver, where? Washington.
Oh, Vancouver, Washington. Okay.
Yes, good to talk to you again.
You too. You too.
I was kind of surprised to hear you on Ground Zero last week.
Oh, that was fun.
I think old Clyde was a little more animated than usual for some reason that night.
Well, excellent to hear.
But I have a question for Ron. Has anyone, this sounds a little silly, I guess, but has anyone ever tried to set up a boombox and play music for these entities? If they like it, perhaps it would encourage interaction. What do you think about that?
Well, the problematic way of getting it in there is we haul things in with mules and horses, and the boomboxes. Basically, we tried to replay the recordings back to them, and at times we would sing up there, you know, just to do that, but to take an instrument up there was a little bit troublesome with the mule. You never knew when it's going to roll off the edge or something.
Yeah, I wouldn't start out with heavy metal or something like that.
Well, the boombox, I'm not even sure they had boomboxes back then.
Yeah, they did.
We tried to play,
I think so,
stuff on our cassettes, but we had interaction.
But that's kind of a universal language, perhaps
music.
It might work.
I'm just not sure that that mattered because we had interaction anyway.
Okay, well, I just thought I'd...
That's a good idea. I mean, I don't discourage that at all. I think probably music is a great way, a tool to get through to them. And having fun and basically being of good attitude and good mind, I think, is important. And have music, absolutely. I would agree with that. But again, it's a little problematic getting instruments up there, or like a guitar. I play guitar, but I could never take one up there.
Well, a lot of people do take their... Yeah, a lot of people do take their guitars, and the other, Denise was talking about the flute that she had, and, you know, yeah. I think the Indian, you know, they Native Americans did a lot of that flute kind of stuff.
Yeah,
so.
Oh, I totally agree. We just never had to do it. We had interaction anyway, and I definitely had interaction when I was up there the last time, and I didn't have any music with me, but again, I don't discourage that. It's just if you can, you can.
And you never know what kind of interaction you might get. So thank you very much, Howard. Appreciate that. Yeah, it may give you a different response. I mean, especially yours were so, gosh, so active. I mean, that's rare, I think. I don't hear that from so many people. Let's head to wild card line number 5, Luke in Duluth, Minnesota. How are you, Luke?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. You got a question for Ron?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Say, so when I used to live up in northern Minnesota, it's really funny. I didn't really know what the sound was until you played it over the air tonight. And I went, holy crap, like that's the same sound I heard out in the woods. I used to live up in the Iron Range up by Virginia, Minnesota. And it seems like during the summertime and the wintertime, the sounds would be different. Like during the summertime, I hear a lot more like knocking and whooping. Where in the wintertime, I would hear that samurai sound and then a lot of screaming and whistling. And you could always tell that it'd be a high-pitched whistle because all the wolves around in the area would start howling. And then in the summertime, they would whistle too, and you could hear them. We'd have our windows open. And so what I thought was would be, a Sasquatch. And I guess my question is, there's a lot of signs that showed that they were possibly there. I mean, you'd see dumpsters knocked over in the morning, and I mean, it could be wolves or wild animals dragging, or it looked like it could have been something that actually went through the dumpster and was throwing trash. So I guess, has there ever been any reports of Sasquatch in northern Minnesota?
Thank you for that question.
Seems like there's just about every state's got some kind of a wild, clear runaround they don't understand. They're reported all over the world, these things are. They're multiplying, too. So, again, there's different types, I believe. And I've heard of them being in dumpsters, being seen in dumpsters, scavenging for food, I suppose, or maybe looking for a loaf of bread. I don't know. But, you know, the best way if you want to team up with somebody in that state is go on to BFRO and find out who, BFRO.net, and they have team members just about in every state, and they could steer you into people who are of same like mind and would know more about what's going on in that state.
Especially in Minnesota. Luke, thank you very much for your call. I appreciate that. We're going to have to wrap up the calls here, Ron. You've pulled through the whole night. I'm telling you, you've done a good job. Thank you. You hung in there.
Kept me awake. That's good.
You didn't think you were going to do it. I want to thank you again for your time and sharing all your information with us. Where can we find out more about you and what's next with you?
Well, my website, ronmorehead.com or bigfootsounds.com. You could Google Sierra Sounds and get the same spot. I have a lot of articles on there, a lot of my thoughts, and a lot of my research in Peru, Nepal, and Russia. And you can also go on my store there and acquire the CDs, which I have two different CDs. I have my book there, which also includes a CD, by the way, of the sound bites when you come. It's my 40-year chronicle, my book. And I should have my other one out this fall, Quantum Bigfoot. And I think it's going to be really well received because this hits right on the spot that so many people are interested in and how do they do what they do. And why does something so big and so strong and so intelligent stay so hidden from humanity? They can't interfere with us. And that's my thoughts. You know, I think they're mandated to not interfere with us, or that messes with their karma, maybe. So they normally don't interact with people. So if you have interaction, you're lucky. I have a whole sheet on how to obtain interaction, if that's what you want. But I do tell people this. Keep your guard up. You don't know what for sure you're dealing with. They can deceive you, too. So the trick with you, what they're all about, we just don't know. It's a big mystery, and I don't claim to know everything, but I've been doing this for 45 years now, and there's just a lot going on we don't understand. But just keep your guard up when you're dealing with them, and use your instincts, basically. There you are with the pineal gland again. Use what your feelings tell you. Around them.
Trust yourself.
Anyway, there's my websites, bigfootsounds.com, ronmorehead.com. And, thank you.
Wow, that was very nice. Thank you very much. It was a lot of fun, and hearing your audio and everything. Thank you so much, Ron. I'll be talking to you, and hopefully I'll get to go out with you in July. At least I'm going to give it a shot. Thanks so much, Ron. We really appreciate that. And thank you as well, the listeners, for tuning in tonight, and I appreciate that. I hope that you enjoyed the show as well as much as I did. And if you did enjoy the show, please write in here to Coast and let us know. We'd appreciate that. From the 840 WHS studios of iHeartMedia in Louisville, Kentucky, many thanks go out to Bill May, Kelly Carls, Kirk Wesley, Tim Banal, Lex Lonehood, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Dan Galante, Tommy Danheiser, Sean Ludasewer, Nathan Staten, Lisa Lyon, George Knapp, Donna Walker, and welcome her. She's new to me. And also, of course, Mr. George Norrie. Until we meet again, hey, keep watching the night skies and continue with me, Connie Willis, to seek out the strange and uncover the unknown. It's Coast to Coast AM. Talk to you soon.